The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Z Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by Royal Star Assurance, Bamboo Shack, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, the Digital Transformation Unit, and Fidelity Bank Bahamas.
Welcome to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. On this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I trust that you're doing well. I hope you all are not here. I'm here. Producer, I don't know what's going on. It seems to be an echo. We could try and sort that out for our audience. Yeah, I think we got it now. Great. All right. Welcome again to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. If you want to give us a call at all today on the show, please feel free to do so on any of the following numbers: 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or 325-4316. 325-4316. Or 325-4259. 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas Channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. And she and my mom likes to call me on a regular now. Make sure her son is doing okay. Thank you very much, mommy. Appreciate that very much. You can also catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. So I note
that the financial secretary seemed to hint at the possible introduction of taxes to help the government secure revenue to keep back the rising and the significant deficits that we have had. But today, Prime Minister indicated that would only be a last resort, that was not what was being contemplated. So the suggestion was that he contradicted the financial secretary. Read it how you want. Maybe he is saying, maybe the financial secretary was a little bit more certain about what is likely to happen, and the prime minister is saying, oh, no, only as a last resort. But I think both statements are telling. Now, I want to read something for you all. I want to read this, and I'm quoting right now. It was found that reducing the VAT rate by 2%, 2 percentage points, from 12% to 10% shows only slight improvements in the real GDP, unemployment rates, prices, and the poverty levels. There is, however, a worsening of the current account, the fiscal deficit, and the debt to GDP ratio. There's no change in the Gini coefficient, the Gini ratio. Listen, if the priority is to benefit the economy, even if only slightly, the VAT reduction should be pursued. However, at the same time, there must be compensating tax revenue initiatives to address the rise in the deficit and the debt to GDP ratio. That is a direct quote from the published study done by the Government and Public Policy Institute on the recovery and sustainable economic growth of the Bahamas, which was commissioned by the government of the Bahamas last year. So in other words, what that study found was, and the study was used what we call a computable general equilibrium model. Computable general equilibrium model. It is a model, a mathematical simulation of the economy that allows you to not predict what will happen, but to ask a question such as this. If this is the state of economy and you change this, what is likely to happen? So you simulate different changes to the economy, and based on the models, the model having captured the multiple relationships and interactions between the industries, between the agents in the economy and all that, based on that and based on the fact that that is captured through real data, historic data, if you change something, what is likely to be the impact on the economy? And so what one of the simulations was that was requested by the government, what if the VAT rate were changed from 12% to 10% in one instance, just as that, or change from 12% to 10%, but removing the zero. You can get marginal improvements in the economy, marginal, but the deficit, the debt to GDP ratio would meaningfully be impacted negatively, and that you would have to have compensating revenue initiatives. Now, what's compensating revenue initiatives? Well, you can have aggressive tax collection if that could yield it, and I'm gonna have some words to say about that later on. Or you can have increases in existing taxes, or you can have introduction of new taxes, or you could have a sell-off of things that you think you could sell and bring in revenue that way. But those would be avenues of revenue measures to compensate for the loss in revenue because you would be reducing the value added tax. And so that's what the study found. So it is not quite surprising. You see the gains in the economy that the model suggested could come about by a reduction in VAT is the result of freeing some monies that people would otherwise spend on taxes so that they could spend it in the economy. However, that gain, however slight, however marginal, it takes time to work itself through the economy. In the meantime, though, the revenue hit is immediate, more immediate, so that you have a deteriorating fiscal deficit soonest, but economic marginal gains coming later. So it lags. So what you're gonna get is a uglier picture soonest, even though you may get a slightly better picture later on. And it seems like that scenario is likely to play itself out in the present circumstances. Of course, in addition to that, if the economy itself isn't performing a pace to provide you with some buoyancy to further boost your economic, your tax revenue, then you have additional challenges in that respect, right? And I think that it is clear that while our economic growth is going to be substantially better than last year, that we still are requiring greater gains to the economy than we presently have if the government is going to experience the level of revenue buoyancy that it needs to stave off some of this mounting deficit that we have seen over the last couple of years, all right? And so again, I am not surprised at the tax talk, not surprised. On a political front, on a commercial front, it's not the kind of thing that business people hear or consumers want to hear. Let me say it again. Consumers, which largely means the voting population of the Bahamas, don't want to hear you're going to raise taxes, especially after you just cut the VAT, you said, right? Business people don't want to hear you raise taxes because they are trying to recover from a stunning period of economic contraction and are trying to make up some gains, and they don't want to hear any additional cost to themselves. So they don't want to hear that either. They don't want to hear that. But who wants to hear news that you're raising taxes? International credit rating agencies, people who are holding your debt, because that means that they'll be more likely to be able, you'll be more likely to service your debt than not. The IMF wants to hear that kind of talk. And these kinds of people, they're the ones who want to hear that kind of talk. So this talk isn't without audience. Don't let anybody fool you. You may not like the tax talk. You may hate it, but I told you all before, what's good news for you, sometimes it's bad news for some people you have to deal with, or what's good news for some people is bad news for you. So now, if you're international investors, if you're holders of government instruments, debt instruments, if you are credit rating agencies, if you're the IMF, you're hearing a prime minister, minister of finance say, no, I won't raise taxes unless it's a last resort. What I'm hoping for is growth, economic growth, and tax collection. I'll talk to you about that a little later on. While at the same time, you heard a financial secretary who is the principal technical financial advisor to the government, okay, an administrator of the government's fiscal affairs, say that's likely a route that you have to go. So now you got to get at the truth, or rather you have to get at what is really the case. Well, in the circumstances, you would say, you should listen to the prime minister, you should listen to the minister of finance. Now, dare say it is something to have a prime minister, minister of finance, seemingly contradict his financial secretary. But I'm gonna talk to you about that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host.
In relationship banking, we take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Happy anniversary, My Gateway. Did you know that you can request and pay for over 35 government services on mygateway.gov.bs? Sign up today and access government services online with efficiency and simplicity. It's a celebration of a year of collective success on our digital transformation journey. My Gateway, making government work for you.
Babe, you moshed the car?
I moshed the car. The lady run into me moshed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and you call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to live. I would like host. So glad you join us here today on Battalion Radio 96.9 FM. Yeah, let's start that echo in 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. But I don't think I should abandon this topic today. Maybe we say it to one them come forward. Yep, we have some echo going on, producer. I'm not sure what's going on. Let's see. Okay. All right. Yes, I think we sorted it out. I don't know. This might not be a topic I should be delving into. This one might get me in problems or something like that today. I don't know. But I can guarantee you that on this side of the fence, I was safe. I'm hardwired. My internet speed test is at 289. You know, that's super. So I'm not the problem. So we can get it sorted out, hopefully. All right. So I was saying that we seem to have an issue between what the financial secretary conveyed and what the prime minister conveyed. This is not unique in the world. It isn't. It happens in many places in the world, including in our government, where it is possible a minister may contradict a policy of the government or a public officer may do so. And that's possible. It is always necessary to do what the prime minister did, which is to clarify the position of your administration, because it is, in fact, his government, right? Now, we actually exist in a new era of public officers' visibility and vocalizing in the Bahamas, I must say, especially in respect of the Ministry of Finance. It has not been the tradition in the Ministry of Finance that a financial secretary has been as visible and as vocal as we have found in the last, certainly in the Minister administration, visible. Now you're seeing Simon Wilson act similarly. He used to be Finance Secretary prior to Marlon Wilson, and he was visible and vocal, but not to the degree as he now appears to be. But it's kind of new in the arena of Ministry of Finance operation. Now, there is nothing wrong with a financial secretary or a permanent secretary or any public officer being visible and vocal so long as it is with the sanction of the policy director. So if they want to speak on matters of policy, if they have that leeway, if they have that sanction by their policy directorates, no problem. No problem. It is only when they are speaking out of turn in that regard, when they are speaking not on the behalf of or with the behest of the minister or the prime minister. And so that can happen.
So in those circumstances, especially if the speaking is contradicting or not favored by the administration, then it is necessary for the minister and or the prime minister to speak, to clarify, to correct, to state what the government's policy is. Now, with that said, let me tell you something. Is that a permanent secretary or a financial secretary will get in the public space and without any sense that they have the leeway to say something, the probability that happens is slim to none. Now, I'm not saying that they are told, go out there and tell the people X, Y, and Z. But in my own experience, you would have to think that there was something that gave a permanent secretary or financial secretary a level of comfort to be able to say something that might contradict what the government's position is. Mind you, if the government hadn't decided it, if the government hadn't directed him or her to say so, then they are totally not aligned to do so. It's not appropriate to do so. But, you know, it is conceivable that discussions may be had and that there may even have been a sense of resolution about those discussions in which in a press interview, you make a split-second judgment about an answer to a question that then lands you saying something that may have been, in fact, resolved but not intended to be pronounced. And I can't imagine a minister of finance wanting to announce any kind of tax measure, saving and except in a very structured and formal context, like the budget communication, like the mid-year budget presentation. It's highly unlikely that you want to be making those kinds of statements that way. In fact, you know, you want to have discussions sometimes with critical entities like the IMF and those, because you kind of want to get some thoughts about it. You now have simulation tools that you can use to simulate what the impact of those measures might be. So you want to have done a lot of work before you get to making that kind of public pronouncements. And once you make it, you are making it in the context of a studied, reliable sense of what it will mean for the government and the country. But it is really, really unusual that any permanent secretary, these are senior people, or any financial secretary might be comfortable enough publicly stating or announcing an iffy public policy. Highly unusual. Okay? And so I can tell you that notwithstanding the prime minister's comments, which didn't to my mind totally rebuff what the financial secretary said, did not at all. Because when you look at what the prime minister said and the minister of finance and what the financial secretary said, what you're talking about more are degrees of probability and degrees of timeliness or timing. You're not talking about absolute, no, that's not going to happen. That's not what the prime minister said. It's one is, okay, you do it as a last resort. The other is, you're probably at your last resort. And so that begs the question, what is the last resort? The prime minister says you can get taxed, but only as a last resort. So what is a last resort for the country in order to be taxed? Let me tell you what a last resort is. Last resort is, provide new revenue through economic buoyancy. So the growth is in helping you not escalate your deficit further or reduce it significantly enough. That's one. So look at the economy's growth and see what that's doing and how that's playing out in government revenue. That tells you something. So if you had a government released one of its quarterly reports and the quarterly report says, well, you know, we're not having that $100 million ahead of target as we were having before. We're now like $5 million ahead and that's not, you know, warning sign. Secondly, if you see tax collection doesn't yield as much revenue as is possible. Now, here is why tax revenue collection is always challenged to be relied upon as a means to bail you out. Why do you have arrears in taxes to begin with? Yes, some of those arrears reflect unwillingness of people to pay their taxes, yes. But I don't believe that is 70, 80% of the arrears. The arrears oftentimes reflect people's either inability to pay or tightness such that they are having to make such hard choices, they feel like they would get an easier time not paying the government than not paying the rent, the mortgage, and these kinds of things. So largely, the arrears reflect a challenge in people's financial and economic circumstances. Well, unless those economic circumstances have changed, and that largely results from a better economy on the whole, which we do not now have, not relative to 2019, 2018, and certainly not relative to the better times we would have had, say, in 2001, 2000, 1999 and them. So if your circumstances haven't changed that much, if the government comes to press you, that doesn't mean you can pay. And even if you pay, all that means is I'm going to take this money and pay it to you, so I'm not going to be able to spend it in the economy and do other things. And so I'm going to be extracting from my ability to pay, to spend in the economy, which is going to hurt the economy, which is why aggressive tax revenue measures, collection measures, almost amount to new taxation in a way. Because what it does is it's still reducing the disposable income of the consumer. Because by now, what that consumer has done is built into my financial circumstances and is operating on that basis. Once you go ahead now and come and collect, now that requires a recalculation, I really don't have that much money. So that consumer feels more impoverished and that leads to less spending. And so it is hardly ever the case that the government is going to yield abundantly more tax revenue as a consequence of just aggressive collection, especially if the revenue arrears is in the middle class of your country, right? So you have to look at the government's arrears and collection strategy and say, okay, who are they likely to get most of this tax from? Well, it's the middle class. It's middle income persons. So you got to ask yourself, many of you middle income people, how fit and suitable are you right now to be asked to be paying some more taxes that you owed? And so that becomes a part of the challenges. Yes, it can bring yields. Yes, it can bring additional revenue, but it can't bail us out of the circumstances we're in, because even in the best of circumstances, that the effect on your economy is going to be counterproductive. There's no question about it. Especially if these are lagging arrears in years. Okay? So if you don't see the government, if the economy is not going as fast as is necessary to help really buoy government revenue, if the tax collection measure doesn't get you to where it is that you want to be, if the government, because those are the two biggest ones, and you know they're the two biggest ones because those are ones that the Prime Minister mentioned. He said, we're hoping for economic growth and we're hoping for revenue collection. Well, other than that, they're selling off assets. And that isn't likely to yield you any degree of significant revenue, especially in the short run. Because what assets do the government have to sell off? Land. For the most part, land. And how's the government going to sell off a buggy load of land to significantly reduce its deficit in the next 6 months, 12 months? Not going to happen. And you don't even want it to happen because you are not interested in selling the land off. So who's the government going to sell it to? Some of it to Bahamians, but a lot of it to the foreigners, right? And so largely, if you don't see the economy get there, and you don't see the revenue collection get you there, then the last resort will kick in. Last resort will kick in, and taxation will be likely. Now, the question would be taxation on who? Who could take increased taxes right now? Well, we like to ask that question, but the truth of the matter is everybody. When I come back, I'll talk about it some more. You listen to Z-Line. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been
disgraced. Grand Bahama, it's time to read all about it once again. As the Nassau Guardian starts a weekly Grand Bahama news supplement each and every Tuesday starting February 8th. Learn more about advertising opportunities in the Grand Bahama news supplement by calling Barefoot Marketing at 727-9515 or 827-4578. Grand Bahama, make sure you get your Nassau Guardian daily and grab your Grand Bahama news supplement each Tuesday to keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news.
Start the year making all the right money moves. Budgeting and saving? Yes. Investing? Check. But what if you could do more? With an RF brokerage account, you can get priority access to local investment opportunities right as they come to the market. Never miss a bond or new share offering again. Plus, you can house all your investments in one place and benefit from expert investment advice. Contact us at brokerage@rfgroup.com to start doing more today. Some conditions apply. RF, money at work.
With all that's going on in the world, we could all use a little more kindness. Babu Shack encourages you to join us as we spread and share kindness this holiday season. A kind word or gesture, checking on a friend or loved one, helping a family in need. The little things go a long way. Kindness changes everything. So be an agent of hope. Visit www.bekindbahamas.org and Be Kind Bahamas on social media for updates. Babu Shack reminds you that a better Bahamas begins with you.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If please feel free to do so. And
323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We're talking about the possibility of taxation that seems to have been hinted at in the one instance by the financial secretary, in the other instance by the prime minister, but only as a last resort. And we talked about what those last resort might in fact be for the country. And I indicated to you, if you want to watch for it, not sufficient economic growth to impact revenue, not sufficient yield from aggressive tax collection, and certainly not to look for it, because it won't happen, any significant sell-off in assets that could raise revenue for the country. So in point of fact, those first two, which is what the prime minister pointed to in terms of what they are looking at, says they're looking at growth in the economy and tax collection. That's not new. That's typically what the government has relied upon when it had no interest in taxation or taxing people. So if the last resort came about and the government had to tax, the question is, who would it tax? You say, who could take taxation right now? Well, and I said, everybody could take it. If you have no income, therefore you can't spend, then you don't have to worry about taxation, because the Bahamian economy has no income taxes for you. The only way the government can get taxes from you is by your spending money. But if you don't have money to spend, you won't pay any taxes. Now, if you pay, you borrow money or you get some money and you go and spend it, well, you will pay taxes, because if you buy in the food, so you pay the VAT. And, you know, if you want to drive your car, you'll license it, or do your driver's license and so forth. So if you have no money to spend, taxation ain't no issue for you. But if you have money to spend and you are going to spend money, well, if the government raises taxes, even if you say I can't afford it, is irrelevant, because the government has what we call legitimate coercive power. Meaning it is the only entity in the state that can force you to give it money and do it legally. Anybody else does that to you, force you to get their money, they'll be charged with robbery and they go to jail. But the government can tell you, listen, I want you to give me $10 or $100 or 10% of your income, and there's nothing you could do. It's legitimate coercive power, legitimate power to force you to do something. So whether you could afford it or not, whether it's your last couple of dollars or not, is irrelevant. Unless you can find a way to dodge the government, you're going to have to pay it. If you need to go to the food store, you're not going to get that item if you don't pay the VAT. Right? Or any other store you go in, or any other service you go in that's VATable, it's not going to happen. So it really doesn't matter who can afford it. As long as you're spending, you're going to pay it. And all that means is, if you're tight in a tight situation and the government's new taxation is squeezing you, then you're just going to be tighter in your situation unless you avoid paying the taxes and run the risk of being prosecuted. Right? So it is irrelevant. That's one of the reasons why government lending to the government is not as risky as lending to a private person. If a private person runs into difficulty servicing a loan, the private person can't go on around forcing people to give them money so they could pay their loan. They can't do that. You could borrow money and do it. Somebody could be generous and give it to you. But the government, if it needs more money, can simply pass a law requiring you to pay. Now, it can target in different ways who
who it goes to for that money. So the government might say, you know what, let's avoid any new measures that target the middle class or the lower income households. Let's go at the upper income households. Let's go at the wealthier, larger corporations or companies. And so it could target the spending that way. I mean, the taxes that way. And sometimes that's the more politically savvy way to do it, because people don't really have any sympathy for wealthy people. They don't really have any sympathy for most companies. They tend to have sympathy for how the government has tried to tax the numbers people before, but I think they found and sought to think that what the government was doing seemed extortive in a way. So people have had some sympathy for that. But generally, if you tax in banks, government don't care. Tax the joint, I mean, people don't care. You tax in the banks. Yeah, tax and they're making plenty of money. You tax big corporations, they're making plenty of money. You tax the foreign wealthy, tax them, they're making plenty of money. So you can target that way as a matter of political strategy. But that too has its limits and its consequences. There's no question about that. That too has its limits and its consequences. Now, the broadest base of income to tax is in the middle class. The middle class of the Bahamas has the broadest base to tax. So on the one hand, while you may want to avoid that, it also means avoiding tapping into what amounts to really the largest component of income at your disposal. And so I could give you a little indication of that, or what I mean by that, if I could find it. Because, you know, if you look at the Bahamas household labor surveys, they tend to give you distribution of household income. And that'll tell you, like, for instance, if you look at the distribution of income, the people who make between $20,000 and $40,000, listen to me now, those people have a total income of $897 million. $897 million. The ones who make between $40,000 and $60,000 make $848 million. So between $20,000 and $60,000, which is essentially your middle income grouping, you have basically $1.8 billion, almost half of the total household income. So if you're going to tax, that's where the biggest chunk is. Now, if you tax people who make over $100,000, their income is $619 million, right? Big, but not as big as that chunk that I talked about. And there are 5,600 above plus of them. And in the other categories that I mentioned, you're looking at about 40,000 households. 40,000 households to 5,000 households. 40,000 households with 1.8 or thereabouts billion dollars, and 5,000 or so, a little more, households with $618 or $619 million. So you can, if you're looking for tax revenue, then it's hard to say, let me tax and not look at the middle income. That's very hard to do. You could do it, but it's not so easy to do. When we come back from the news break, I want to talk to you about some realities of taxation. We'll be back after the news break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lanyo.
Together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, letting you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
We know how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options. We're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Are you interested in the Bahamian economy? How about tips to improve your financial literacy? Tune in to Guardian Radio's newest financial podcast series, C-File Talks. The podcast will provide listeners with their weekly dose of economic issues and solutions and the keys to financial freedom. C-File Talks will be hosted by an array of finance experts here to give honest and beneficial advice. You won't want to miss the C-File Talks podcast series, Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Track and field is the queen of the Olympic Games.
In its seventh season, Track World with Alpheus Phillipson, the only radio show in the Bahamas and one of the few in the world dedicated to our beloved sport, continues to promote the athletes, coaches, officials, leadership, and the partners who make a difference in our sport.
We encourage you to tune in to Track World on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM each Tuesday evening on cable channel 969, on Guardian Radio's website www.guardiantalkradio.com, or streaming live on Facebook at 6:30 and be dazzled.
Concerned about your health? Have a health question that you're curious about? Ask the doctor. The Doctor is In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. We're talking health, wellness, and all things that pertain to the Bahamian society and the health of the nation. Tune in Tuesday nights at 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. The Doctor is In on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Hi, I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm your host on the NAGB's Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. Blank Canvas airs every Wednesday night at 6:30 on Guardian Talk Radio 96.9. On Blank Canvas, we meet cultural practitioners from the creative community here in Nassau, Bahamas, and also internationally, Bahamians from all around the world doing amazing things in the cultural scene. Tune in to NAGB's Blank Canvas to hear about what's happening at your institution and around the Bahamas every Wednesday night at 6:30 on Guardian Talk Radio 96.9.
There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation.
The Essentials with Hubert Edwards, Thursday nights live at 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together.
Live. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon, where we have been talking about the issue of taxation as brought to the fore by some seeming contradiction between what was indicated by the financial secretary and the prime minister and minister of finance, the prime minister saying no new taxes, unless as a last resort. And while the financial secretary seemed to have hinted the possibility that such is required. So I was kind of giving you some rundown on the issue. But I wanted to make some points about this issue of taxation, because taxation is a boogeyman. It's a political boogeyman. Why is it a political boogeyman? It's a political boogeyman because you who are listening to me today, all of you, including myself, none of us want and like to pay taxes. We do not. It is regarded as a necessary evil. If you could avoid paying, if you could find a way to don't pay it, you won't pay it, because nobody wants to free up their, in quote, hard-earned money and pay to the government. We don't like, you know, people don't like the government to begin with, right? Always talk bad about them. Never any, you seldom hear people speak of the government with any sense of pride and dignity and any sense of worth and value and utility. Seldom. All you talk about it as, man, you only, you need them, but you go, my goodness, what if I wish we could get rid of them. So it's a boogeyman because you and I, as a general population, do not want to pay taxes. We want to keep all our money and spend it exactly how we want to pay it, to spend it. Even though gambling is a voluntary tax, it is a voluntary tax. We don't mind spending the gambling the money away, but paying money to the government, oh my goodness, man. So when you get to customs, you do everything in your power, all kinds of gymnastics you could do to try to avoid paying taxes. That's the reality. That's why it's a political football, because the government knows that you put new taxes on people, you're going to become unpopular. Ask the Minnesota administration. It's going to happen. Ask the Christie administration. You bring in VAT, you're going to be unpopular. You increase VAT, you're going to be unpopular. You reduce VAT, you get some benefits of popularity back. But we don't want to pay taxes, so it's a boogeyman. And the governing party knows that it's a boogeyman. And the opposition knows it's a boogeyman. So whoever is in power taxing is going to get bludgeoned by the opposition for raising taxes. And you know how they phrase it? On the poor people in these hard times. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Oh, no, okay. So nobody wants to pay, rich people don't want to pay taxes, poor people don't want to pay taxes, people in between don't want to pay taxes. And let me say this to you, whether you like to hear it or not, or believe it or not, a government that could avoid taxing you or raising taxes on you will avoid taxing you or raising taxes on you. Let me say it again. There is not a politician on the planet God has created who is stupid enough to think it's a great thing, a wonderful thing to tax people. No politician, none whatsoever, with their good sense and head, knows that. Why do you think taxing is provided legislative authority? Because they knew that if they just asked you, say, we have to fund the government, we have to fund national security, we have to pay the police, and we have to pay the teachers. And they said, could you voluntarily give me enough money to do that? People, them poor people, them police officers and teachers would suffer. They would suffer because you won't do it. You might give them a couple dollars, but you won't give them enough dollars. So the government has the lawful authority to command enough money from you to be able to pay these people their salaries. Why? Because it's not a popular thing to do. A minister of finance who is a taxing minister of finance can hardly think he will get away with winning an election. He won't. Not possible. You ain't like him. You ain't like it. In fact, in government studies, they will often tell you that when a prime minister dislikes you or doesn't really care about your political future, he might offer you the Ministry of Finance. Because you become the tax man. Who likes the tax man? If he likes you and wants to boost your reputation, put you in foreign affairs. Everybody loves that glamorous traveling up and down because that makes you look good. In the context of the Bahamas, you might get immigration because if you're chasing Haitians hard enough, you can be popular, right? So ministries of finance and ministers of finance are not popular. Taxation is not popular. So no politician is interested in taxing you. To run around in your head thinking that this is something a politician does because they wanted to do it to you. Let me tell you something. If a politician is taxing you, it is because they don't have another idea how to not bail out on paying your expenses in the government. Not another idea. Oh, I can get somebody say, oh, that's because we need to get more out of the box thinking. Please, grow up, join the real world. Nonsense, right? At some point you can get creative and expand the economy and that can get you more taxes. Awesome, wonderful. Today, when them mountain bills, those mounted bills must be paid, you have got to find the revenue to pay them. When those debts that come due have to be paid, and some of those debts are due to national insurance that has to pay out the benefits that people have paid into national insurance. They have to be paid today. They don't have time for your out-of-box thinking. They don't have time for, oh, you need to be innovative and creative, you know, creative and blah, 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 blah. Nobody has time for all of that. Join the real world, wake up, grow up. You gotta find money. And that's why the government has taxing power. So no politician wants to tax. They know that there's no real political popularity or gain to be had from taxing. So why do it? Because the bills have to be paid. Because they went to Parliament, they went to your representatives in the Parliament of the Bahamas, and they said to your representatives, we expect to take in $2 billion in revenue this year. But we expect to spend $2.8 billion this year. That means that we're gonna have a deficit of $800 million this year, which means we're gonna have to borrow $800 million this year. And if the $2 billion in revenue they expected to come in doesn't come in, and in fact only $1.7 billion comes in, then now the deficit that they thought would be $800 million is now going to turn out to be $1.1 billion, $300 million more than they thought it would be. They have to find the money. The money is owed to two people. They spent it. They spent the money. It's spent. Contractors, landlords, the workers in the public service, the former people from whom they borrowed money. All of those people are owed their money. The bills are due. So what do you do? Well, do you want to be the government that defaulted on your obligations to pay? What signal would that send about your country? It cannot pay. This is the country you're inviting investors to come into to invest, a country that cannot pay. This is a country that cannot pay its police officers, and therefore we should think it's safe. It cannot pay its teachers, its nurses, and we should think that the healthcare system and the education system is safe. It cannot pay its loans, and it's coming back to ask for more loans. That country is going to go to the IMF and say, I need help. Please bail me out. We got a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
All right. Now, I don't think the public have a problem with paying tax. You know, I think that the problem is how the tax money is being run.
Now, let me ask you.
I'll say one example. For instance, we pay our license to keep the road, you know, nice and good and everything. But what has happened? You know, the road, them still bad.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question, because I don't know if you understood what I said, right? Do you like to pay taxes?
If I like to pay taxes?
Yes.
Yeah, no problem, though. No problem.
No, that wasn't my answer. Do you like to pay taxes?
No. Hear what I can say. I have no problem in paying taxes, you know, because you got to pay it anyhow. But the point what I'm saying, with me, I don't take exception, but the public take exception on where they don't know where the tax money be going to.
Okay, I understand. Let me show you an example.
The baseball stadium, which is a big talk, right?
Right.
That $60 million just to do a stadium. You know what we could do with $60 million? I'm just saying. And nobody know how these money has been spent. Remember the other day, me and you talk, and you were saying about the how much places government be renting and all what they could do to help with that. Well, they can start paying some rent. That could save a lot of money.
Because okay.
Again, I can say it. It's the way how they run the money.
Okay, bro. And
one government say one thing, the next one come in, they increase it. Because I use the baseball stadium again as an example. When the PLP government came and they said it's going to cost this, then Bannister come back and say, oh, we increased it, it's going to be this. Now the PLP come back in, now they're going up to pretty fees. So the public don't know where the tax money be going, you know.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. I appreciate you calling. Okay, we have another caller on the line, I think. Do we have another caller on the line? No? Okay, I understand the point that he's making, but that doesn't detract from my point. Nobody likes to pay taxes, man. That's an axiom even in economics. Like people don't like that's different. That's different than saying people don't mind paying taxes. You don't mind paying it because you won't have a choice, or because you're conscientious enough to know that you have to pay your expenses, and the only way for the government to pay it mostly is through taxation. But the fact of the matter is, people do not like to pay taxes. That's just an obvious principle, and that's all I was saying, right? Do we have a call on the line now?
Hello.
Yes. Hi. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Yes. Good afternoon, sir.
I'm a Bohemian, and I hate to pay taxes. I hate taxes, and I am happy for your show, all of your show. I find them very educational and explain to the average person how these things go. Because for all of my life, I couldn't get my fellow Bohemians to understand that the more the government does for you and the more you require the government to do, it means the more you have to pay in taxes.
You're absolutely right.
And I think they're getting to understand now that there's a direct link between what the government is doing for you and what you have to pay in taxes.
You're exactly right.
So I appreciate this show and keep up the good work.
Let me ask you a question before you go. You said you hate paying taxes, right?
Yeah, I can't stand it.
Yeah. If you find 10 of your friends, how many of them that like paying taxes?
None.
I thought not.
But they all want stuff from the government though.
Okay. I appreciate you calling, man. Thanks a lot. We have a text here, says Mr. Lang, I don't want to pay tax because the money is largely wasted. Look at the buildings they give to cronies to build. The one on JFK, $4 million, became $45 million, and it is wrought with problems. The baseball stadium was $27 million spent, need another $30 million. But my car fell in a pothole last night. Now it's rattling. That is what the gas tax is for, the roads. I would not mind paying if things work. Yeah, if you're a conscientious Bohemian, meaning you have an understanding of the need for certain basic physical and social infrastructure to be provided in order for the society to be safe and sound and livable. You cannot mind paying taxes. That's not the question. If you didn't have to, let's say all of that could be provided without you paying taxes, would you still go ahead and tell the government, please charge me taxes? You wouldn't. You say, but then the government wouldn't need it. Yeah, the government wouldn't need it, but it could use it to do more things though. Why wouldn't you still pay taxes? Because you don't like it, right? And I mean, that's just a foregone conclusion, right? That's not a question that you won't pay it or you don't have a problem, or you have a problem. You'd have less of a problem if the government used it better. But the fact of the matter is taxes are not things that people want to pay. And that's why you have to force people to do it. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hello, Chicago.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hi.
Hello.
I'm good, man. And yourself? Hi. I'm listening to you.
Oh, okay. I'm doing pretty good.
Great.
I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
What did Brave Davis say to the people in Grand Bahama to something to do but investors?
Yeah. He said the investors in Dubai did not appear interested to invest in Grand Bahama, even though they were interested to invest in the Bahamas.
You sure now?
Well, that's what I read, and that's what I
think I saw it too. But okay. I'm listening to the House of Assembly, and uh-huh. Fred Mitchell just get up and tell Aram Lewis that he said it out pretty blunt, that Aram Lewis was lying. Say, Brave Davis did not say that.
Okay.
Now, I know what I hear, and I'm trying to figure out now if I'm going a little bit crazy or something, because that's what I hear. The investors didn't want to invest in Grand Bahama.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Now, mind you, I didn't read the whole story, but that's what.
Yeah.
But I heard too.
But what happened? Well, basically, I listen to about 3 or 4 news every evening. Some station don't bring on, so I try to get the 3 or 4 in all the time.
Yeah.
But I listen, and Fred Mitchell, because I'm listening to the House of Assembly, and Fred Mitchell just stand up and tell Aram Lewis that he was lying. They did not say that.
Wow.
Also, this morning, there was a situation where Thompson brought up the taxes thing. And every minister on the next side, they was outrageous because that was not true. In fact, Thompson said what he was going to do, he was going to lay his tablet on the host table.
Okay.
Because it seems like everybody's defending something. And I'm trying to figure out these people. If this is a new norm or something, this can't be a new government that gets spinning stories. Let me see.
I'm reading from the Guardian. I'm reading from the Nassau Guardian. And I'm reading a story by Paige McCartney. And the story says, Prime Minister Philip Brave Davis said yesterday that the government is working to restore the investor confidence that has waned in Grand Bahama over the years, admitting that potential investors he met with during his Dubai trip were eager to invest in the Bahamas, but not the beleaguered second city. He said, speaking during a press conference following his first official visit to Grand Bahama since the September 16th general election, the Prime Minister said the government wants to have partners in Grand Bahama that have a vision that they are prepared to put their money behind, but that has been hard to come by. And he says, in quote, this is in quote, I think part of the challenge you have, and that's why I say talk is cheap, the challenge has been that the investors' confidence has waned over the many years, and we have been in our movements seeking to restore that confidence. I can say investor confidence in the Bahamas is rising exponentially. I mean, the interest in the Bahamas today is really growing and continues to grow. But for Grand Bahama, there is always this sort of question mark. And why is there that question mark if they are willing to invest in the Bahamas? When we ask them if they'd like to come to Grand Bahama, there's always some reluctance on their part, the Prime Minister said, end quote. I don't know. He says, I had a conversation in Dubai, for example. Persons even came to Grandmama to look at projects, and their desire to invest just withered because it just didn't connect to them. Hopefully, I've been talking to them. They might find that something that might cause them to reconnect and revisit their vision and desire to invest again. But we are working on how we can restore fully the confidence of investors to invest in Grandmama. Now, you know, I have to say, I don't know. When I heard the comment about the prime minister saying that investors didn't seem very eager to invest in Grand Bahama, that didn't necessarily surprise me. But what I wanted to know most of all is, did the prime minister find out if there were any particular reasons? Because if there are particular reasons, then you could begin to work on those things. But I didn't get to read or see anything that the prime minister found out from them as to any specifics that bothered them. Was it the working with the Port Authority? Was it the unattractiveness of the place for the businesses that they would like to entertain? What was it that they didn't find attractive for Grandmama? Because that information would be very helpful to helping the island better position itself for those investors in the future. So what I read of what the prime minister says to me wasn't offensive. If this is the truth and this is what he found out, I mean, it is what it is. He said they're not eager to do so. There seemed to be a reluctance to do so. And he said, you know, maybe through my talk, they might be more interested to do so. So I'm not entirely sure what the issue would be with what he said. I mean, if it was just left out there, and some part of it was just left out there where the prime minister said, well, they're not eager. Again, I would have liked the prime minister to say, well, you and I asked them why. When I went to New York on behalf of the Bahamas government some time ago to do some business for the government, I had the opportunity to speak with some financial services professionals in the legal field in New York. And I was asking them about why they went to St. Kitts to set up mutual funds as opposed to the Bahamas. Because I knew that they weren't doing it, that they were going to St. Kitts and not coming to the Bahamas. That wasn't enough to know that they're not doing it. I wanted to know why. Why? And you know what they said to me? They said, really, there's no real reason other than we have no relationship with anyone in the Bahamas in the legal profession. For instance, what they were saying to me was, we are able to set up some branch of our legal services in St. Kitts, or we could work with legal operators there. And we have a built up over time a relationship with them. And so that's why we would take our businesses in St. Kitts and set up some mutual funds. Maybe that's why we do it in Bermuda or Cayman or wherever, but not so much in the Bahamas. Now, this may have changed since then. This was years ago. But you want to find out why, because now you can think about policy measures that could be affected so that you get more interest in that way. And so the one big challenge I had with what I read about the prime minister comments was I didn't read that he asked, okay, what specifics could we work on? Do we need to work on an address in Grand Bahama that might get you more keenly interested in the place? Because I would be proactive in doing that. I didn't see that. But he didn't say anything wrong to my mind to indicate one. I mean, what benefit would the prime minister get from conveying to us that the investors weren't interested in Grandmama if that didn't happen? why would that make sense for him? If he wanted to be forthright and he went and he said, you know, that's what I'm being told. But he did say, he followed it up with saying, so you can't say the prime minister simply said that investors aren't interested in Grandmama and leave it there. He didn't only say that. He said, maybe by my talking to them, they may now have a keener interest in doing so. And that makes sense. And that is true, right? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavara Lang, your host. We can take a break, and then when we come back, we will continue our discussions. We'll be back after this break.
Afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take.
Start the year making all the right money moves. Budgeting and saving? Yes. Investing? Check. But what if you could do more? With an RF brokerage account, you can get priority access to local investment opportunities right as they come to the market. Never miss a bond or new share offering again. Plus, you can house all your investments in one place and benefit from expert investment advice. Contact us at brokerage@rfgroup.com to start doing more today. Some conditions apply. RF, money at work.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of
app. You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
With all that's going on in the world, we could all use a little more kindness. Babu Shack encourages you to join us as we spread and share kindness this holiday season. A kind word or gesture, checking on a friend or loved one, helping a family in need. The little things go a long way. Kindness changes everything. So be an agent of hope. Visit www.bekindbahamas.org and Be Kind Bahamas on social media for updates. Babu Shack reminds you that a better Bahamas begins with you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to call us in these in the moments we have left on the show, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text me on 43930. Or WhatsApp me on 439-3043 or text on 422-4796. Someone says, I agree with you 100%. We should be able to fix or remedy anything that makes us that unattractive for investment of that magnitude. Let me tell you something. We started out talking about the taxation issue. And I made it clear that the last resort for the government would be taxation if growing the economy or collecting what standing taxes exist is not robust enough. Let me tell you something. The Bahamas has to grow itself out of the fiscal challenges it has. It cannot tax itself out of it. It cannot happen. Listen to me, Bo. It cannot happen. You could tax them all, but it ain't gonna get you there. That's a fool's gold strategy. Can't do it. We have to grow. We have to grow a lot. Now, let me tell y'all something. Stop only trying to tell people that Grand Bahama has all kind of infrastructure and Grand Bahama has all these wonderful this, that, and the next thing. That is not what principally drives investors. I don't care how beautiful your infrastructure is, your island is. That's all wonderful and nice. Even if you have political stability, that's great too, wonderful. But that is not what drives investors. If you want to know what drives investors, it's profits. P-R-O-F-I-T-S, profits. Investors go where they can make the money that they want to make or believe they can make the money they want to make in compensation for the risk that they take. Let me say it again. They have investors investing in Russia, investors in investing Africa and South Africa and other places. They have investors investing in China, and it's difficult even sometimes to do business with the Chinese government. They say it's very bureaucratic. Why do those investors still go there? That's where you can make the profits that you want. Okay? This island has investors. The container port, the Grand Bahama Shipyard, they are here. Okay? But they are here because apparently they can make the level of profits that they desire. That's why. They're not here only because of the infrastructure. They are here largely for the profits, the opportunity, the ability, and whether that profit comes directly to their entity or some in their global enterprise. That's how they make the, that's why they come. So we have to stop thinking of Grand Bahama and Freeport in terms of, oh, we've got all this infrastructure built out and all that kind of stuff. Nice, wonderful, but how's that worked out for Freeport over the last couple of decades? It hasn't. Why? Because what investors need is to seek the opportunity to make profits in your country or from within the country. And that's the proposition that seems not to have yet been largely put to them. Now, let me tell you, it isn't that they may not have seen profit opportunities. You know, sometimes they match that profit opportunity against the people that they have to contend with or deal with. And they think to themselves, well, that profit opportunity may be at risk if I have to deal with these people in this way. And so, you know, you have to take all of that into account. But at the end of the day, investors are trying to make money, man. And if Bahamians and the Bahamas don't continue to think along those lines, what do we have to do? How can we make sure that investors have the maximum opportunity to make the profits that they want to make? You don't get to be that attractive a jurisdiction. We don't have a population base that they can come and sell to that can make big profits. We don't. The tourist enterprises like hotels that are here are not making money selling tourist rooms to Bahamians. They are selling rooms to the world. So millions of people can come and be their customers. Okay? So we have a very small population base that gets to satisfy our grocery stores, our wholesale and retailers, you know, and some of the other enterprises, which by global standards, they're small. They might be big to us, but they are small. They're small compared to to Publix and Kroger's and Walmart, they're tiny businesses. So being able to satisfy their appetite for profitability in our market, domestic market, that's not going to help them. So a lot of the ones that operate from here, their customers are the world. So the container port, who are their customers? The world. Mostly their biggest owner, MSC, right? The shipyard, who are their customers? Carnival and Royal Caribbean, two of the biggest cruise lines in the world, right? The hotels, Bahama, who are their customers? The world, right? You have these commercial banks. Well, they're catering to you, and largely because when you were prosperous and prospering, they could lend you and lend you and lend you and make big bucks because they could make 9-10% off of you. They can't do that now. And so you see the fight and struggle you're having with them now. Because all of a sudden now, your market is not the size it used to be when you had money to borrow and your economy was better. Will investors come in to make money? And how will they make that money? They have to have sufficient markets to help make it. They have to have that possibility of either cost savings or market access that will enable them to see the level of profit that would make you attractive. Now, am I saying Freeport isn't that? Grandmama isn't that? I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that's the proposition that has to be put. We have great infrastructure. That's just a part of your cell. It's like saying we have political stability. We have an educated workforce. You know, we say those things in our investment promotion pitches. But at the end of the day, the investor is tying all of that into, now, if I spend $100 million there, can I make 10%, 20%, 30%? And let me explain something to you in respect of that percentage return. But I'm going to do that. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Education
good
on the
afternoon.
Show.
I
always
yes, ma'am.
Get a lot from you when you come on.
Thank you, ma'am.
But what I want to make a comment on, you know, if we are paying taxes, it's the government's responsibility to provide the infrastructure, fix the roads, education, etc. But from what I observe, the past administration, especially the roads are terrible. They are beyond repair. Now, earlier while you were on, you were talking about interest rates and so forth and the bad services that people are now getting from our local banks. Now, I heard the Prime Minister said something that he's going to be communicating with the bank and with the banks along with the central bank, because I know the central bank has a role to play in terms of setting interest rates. But as a former retired banker, I know that when people got loans, there's a loan you would get 10% add-on. Now, that add-on, that could run you into, say, about 19% or even 20% in interest rates. And there are some loans that where the interest rate is set already. So that's a good step in the right direction for the Prime Minister to say that he's going to look into that, like I said, later on, with the banks and the central bank. And another thing I'd like to ask is, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. I was listening to the news. I don't want to comment on it. Didn't really want to comment on it, but the question what I want to ask you, when a government change, right, I thought that there is some change, some protocols and chain of command in respect to if we now have a new leader of the opposition, and the former Prime Minister, Mr. Menz, right? Hubert Menz, sorry. If he comes on after something was already addressed, I feel that he was not giving the respect to Mr. Michael Pintard. In that regard, you might want to ask me what I really mean. Okay, what I really mean is that the situation with the Prime Minister when they were talking about him breaking protocols, and he said, well, he was on his way to protocol, and he stopped to do something personal for himself. Now, from listening to the news, the Minister of Health addressed it. The Prime Minister himself also addressed it. And then I was shocked to see how the reporters, I don't know if they were from the Guardian Radio, were pushing the mic up in his face after it is said that there is somewhere that you go now to the Prime Minister's office for reporters to answer questions. I think they were breaking protocols right there.
Okay.
What do you think about it?
All right. Thanks a lot. You packed a lot in there. I'm going to have to go to my final break, and then when we come back, I'll address it. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Alain, your host. We'll take our final break then.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
With all that's going on in the world, we could all use a little more kindness. Babu Shack encourages you to join us as we spread and share kindness this holiday season. A kind word or gesture, checking on a friend or loved one, helping a family in need. The little things go a long way. Kindness changes everything. So be an agent of hope. Visit www.bekindbahamas.org and Be Kind Bahamas on social media for updates. Babu Shack reminds you that a better Bahamas begins with you.
I'm not afraid. I'm not take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Alain, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We're in the final moments of the show. Let me say to the caller who called just now, first thing is, I never said that banks have bad policies. I never said that. I said that people complain about the policies of the bank, but I never said that banks have bad policies. Secondly, I wasn't quite following the interest rate talk. I don't, you know, we actually have laws against how much interest rate maximum a institution can charge. I think the limit is at 20% or some for certain kinds of loans anyway. So I don't know what the add-on policy, I missed that. I missed what that was about. But as to Dr. Minnis, I mean, listen, let's be clear. Dr. Minnis does not appear to have any real interest in allowing Michael Pintad to be the leader of the opposition, supported by him in any way. He does not intend to do so. So Michael Pintad will have to simply just do his due and command the stage as the leader of the opposition. All right, and there's nothing in Dr. Minnis's history as prime minister or as a politician that would suggest to anybody that he is interested in cooperating with Michael Pintad. Nothing whatsoever. Notwithstanding his rhetoric. He is clearly, now, he has a role to play. And so there's no question about that, but the lady is right. If you want to support your leader and your leader's made a point, right? You, in fact, largely in a debate, you let your leader speak last. The only person who speaks after that leader is the prime minister, right? But let's not fool ourselves. There's no real interest on the part of Dr. Minnis to be cooperative and helpful and supportive in any meaningful way to Michael Pintad. And Mr. Pintad, I don't know if he knows that or doesn't know it, but he will. He's just going to have to do his due. He's the leader of the opposition, no matter what Dr. Minister does. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Good show as usual. You are so right. If someone says they are reluctant to do something, then you must find out the reason so that it can be addressed. Regarding taxes, the government must be upfront with the people because no one wants to pay taxes, rich or poor, but you cannot tell us you are reducing VAT by 2% and did not tell us that you would put VAT of 10% back on all those food items and medicines that were VAT-free. This is especially bad for those persons who are less fortunate than some. And don't try to convince us that we are gaining because we are not. It is a shame that we get so much pushed down our throats and we are expected to swallow. Another thing about investments, you cannot demand too much from the investor, and these unions are sometimes stumbling blocks on earth. But you know, you're right, and I see what you're saying, but you know, we use this expression a lot, pushed down our throats. Okay, let me ask you, there are many laws in the Bahamas. Are there laws that you told the government to put in place? No, you didn't. So the reason why the government passes laws is because it can't rely on our cooperation in order to do the things that are necessary to bring stability, security, and peace to the state and order to the state. So you get pushed down your throat that you have to stop at a red light. You didn't ask for that. Some of us don't even want to stop at the red light. These days now that they say, oh, you could turn left on this once you stop, but we don't want to stop. We get so it's not pushed down our throats. It's what the law is, right? It's not, I'm sorry, I take exception sometimes to that expression because laws are exactly that. They are coercive, legitimate coercion of us to behave in a certain way. And that's what lawful is, right? God says, love your neighbor. God says, love your enemy. If you regard them as his laws, rules, push down your throat. Yeah, you could obey them or you could disobey them. And the same thing with the laws. You could obey them or disobey them. All right, so I'm not entirely sure I see them as pushing down your throat. This text says, Mr. Lang, I'm just sick of these PLPs finding all kinds of excuse for things that are wrong. Should people just sit back and say nothing when things happen? It appears that they appears that way. When it was the previous administration, they were relentless. We need to be fair and call a spade a spade. Okie dokie. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Just want to say another great show and to continue your work, sir. I appreciate your saying so. All right, so I would tell you that the avoidance of new taxes, which I know the government, any government would want to do, avoid implementing new taxes, is only possible through significant economic growth, meaningful growth for the Bahamas. That's the way. And let me make you angry with me. Significant economic growth is only possible with serious inward foreign direct investment in the Bahamas. Yes, we will need Bahamian investment capital, no question about that. But we already have that, right? The Bahamians are here now. Like you get angry that the foreigners, we say we need foreigners, but your Bahamians are here right now. Their money is here right now. Where is the investment? Hello? 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 Why is the Prime Minister talking about foreign investment in Grand Bahama, Freeport, which is so attractive because of all this infrastructure and what have you? Why is the Bahamian investment not in Grand Bahama? Why is it not in Abaco? Why is it not in Long Island? Why is it not in Andros? Remember now, it Bahamian investor, they're here. Why are we still out here promoting foreign investment? Because the truth of the matter is notwithstanding your desire for it to be different, the fact is, Bahamas' economic growth is largely dependent on attracting foreign investment. Now, mind you, we have a way of avoiding that, you know. We could tamp down our material expectation and living. And we could settle into a more modest lifestyle that's not so dependent on lots of new income. And if we did that and shrank ourselves, minimized ourselves a bit, in fact, a lot, we don't have to grow that much. Because their payments right now, you could live a fairly nice little comfortable lifestyle if you ain't buying Cap'n Crunch and Joy and all these kinds of material things. If you stop watching all this TV and using up all this electricity and so forth, you could live a quiet, modest life. You could do what I did and have a little your backyard farm, or my neighbors did. You have a backyard farm, got your arugula and cabbage and them kind of stuff growing. You could have your coconut tree in the yard with your coconut. You could go fishing and stuff like that. But if not, something else can give. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago, I'm your host. So glad you could join us today. Listen, y'all, stay tuned. The Hydra Black is up next. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody. Take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.